for security? There's a ton of content out there, and if you don't know where to start, it can be overwhelming, even paralyzing. So let's fix that. Welcome to Simply Cyber, a community of tens of thousands of aspiring and active cybersecurity professionals focused on networking, knowledge sharing, and professional development. I'm Dr. Gerald Osher, Chief Content Creator at Simply Cyber, inviting you to get the answers to your cybersecurity problems with hundreds of cybersecurity videos answering your frequently asked questions, interviewing industry experts, and live streaming daily cyber threat briefings hosted by me. Now get the stories and insights you won't find anywhere else. Hit subscribe now and dig into all the fresh content on the channel and in the community. Nothing should stop you from launching and leveling up your cybersecurity career today.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the party. Today is Thursday, March 14th. It's Pi Day. Woo! Get that pie on. This is episode number 578 of Simply Cyber's Daily Cyber Threat Briefing. I am your host, Dr. Gerald Osher, and over the next 45 minutes, me, you, Triple D, not only IT, Matthew Necci, Phil Stafford, BSEC from the DJ booth, Shuttlecrap, Matt McDaniel, Tex Arcana, Chris K. Hall, folks over on LinkedIn like Chuck Garrett, Logan Fuller, folks over on YouTube like Chuck Sapp and Heart of Bereavement, long-timers and first-timers, Simply Cyber Squad members and Simply Cybersecurity community members. We're all going to be shredding the top cybersecurity news stories of the day, and I'll be giving my expert opinion and analysis on each of those stories on what it means to you as a practitioner. So how can you use this information to drive cyber risk reduction for your business stakeholders? And if you're new to the industry, you're trying to break into the industry, welcome to the party, pal. We're super inclusive here. And believe me, you're going to get value from the stream. This is not for practitioners only. This right here is a banger answer when you get asked, which you will be in any job interview, how do you stay current on topics within the industry? Because guess what we're doing? We're ripping through the top cyber news stories every single day. It's epic. Say what's up to chat. Networking is valuable and important. You're going to see hundreds and hundreds of like-minded supportive professionals in the chat, like my man Marcus Kyler in the Yeet crew, like Pastor of Muppets on Discord, like Toasty Pops in Kansas City. Say what's up. High fives if you want, and if you like pie, nom 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 nom. Giddy up on that. Now, before we get into the top cyber news stories of the day, I want you to know that I do not research any of these stories in advance. I have no idea what's coming up. I also have no idea what I'm going to say, which is part of the thrill of the show, because we don't know where it's going to go. And sometimes we go into murky waters, but this is a family-friendly episode, so gather the kids around, get your Cheerios, get your coffee, and let's roll. Before I get into it, I do want to say shout-out and love to the stream sponsors, starting with Barricade Cyber Solutions. Many of you know Eric Taylor and the gang over there. If you were at Black Hills InfoSec, Anti-Siphon's offensive con that most ever offensive or whatever it was yesterday, you know Eric Taylor because he was co-hosting it. But in his day job, when he's not wearing a cape, Barricade Cyber Solutions is dedicated to helping businesses from cyber attacks and recover from the damage done. Cyber attacks can cause massive issues for businesses and send dedicated, hardworking business owners into turmoil. But guess what, y'all? Barricade Cyber Solutions knows how to mitigate the damage done. They know how to yeet threat actors out the environment. And they know how to get you back on track and back up and running as a business. So do yourself a favor. Check them out at barricadecyber.com. Bookmark it if you have to. Put it next to the fire extinguisher in the break room. Break glass in case of emergency. Contact barricadecyber.com. Also want to say shout out and love to Panopsi Security. Brandon Poole and the whole gang over there at Panopsi. They are operating left of boom, i.e. they can help you set yourself up for success. Maybe you want to roll out NIST Cybersecurity Framework 2.0. Boom, they can help you with that. Maybe you want to do a tabletop exercise to test the efficacy of your ability to recover in the event you get slapped in the mouth by a threat actor. Boom, done. Tough acting, tin acting. They can nail it. So if you need help, get a partner who understands your cyber program, regardless of your industry, your business size, your resource allocation. Don't be shy. Contact Panopsi.com. They can help you with your program and your business goals. Also, Anti-Siphon Training, but more about these beautiful babies at the mid-roll. want to say every episode of the Daily Cyber Threat Briefing is worth half a CP. What is this? Hold on one second. Want to let you know every episode of the Daily Cyber Threat Briefing is worth half a CPC. Don't be shy. Say what's up in chat. Hashtag Team SC. If you're a regular, you know the routine. If you're a first timer, do drop a hashtag first timer in chat. We love welcoming our newcomers. We have a special emote for you. We have a special sound effect for you. So don't be shy and basically say what's up and let us welcome you into the Simply Cyber community. We love welcoming our newcomers. Hashtag first timer. And seriously, get the CPEs. Just say what's up. Grab a screenshot of your name in chat. That's why it's streaming on stream over there. And get those CPEs when the time comes, okay? All right. I love it. I love it. I love it. Let me take a slug of this coffee. I feel like I'm forgetting something, but I don't know what. I do feel like I'm forgetting something. First team in a while. Golly a libbin. You know what? Welcome back. Good morning, everybody. It's great to see you. Jay and Michelle with the Black Eyed Peas. Jesse Johnson getting up early. Guys, do me a favor. Sit back, relax, and let's let the cool sounds of that hot news wash over us in an awesome wave. I'll see you at the mid-roll.
From the CISO series, it's cybersecurity headlines.
These are the cybersecurity headlines for Thursday, March 14th, 2024. I'm Rich Straffolino. Researchers find vulnerabilities in Gemini. In a blog post, Google announced it began to roll out restrictions on types of election-related queries for which Gemini will return responses in India ahead of its general elections. However, research from Kenneth Jung at Hidden Layer makes these measures' effectiveness an open question. Their new report details three content manipulation vulnerabilities in Gemini, Google's latest Gen LLM family. These allow for leaking a system prompt, using variations of uncommon tokens to get a model to leak previous responses, and getting around content restrictions by framing a request as an act of fiction. This last vulnerability allowed the researchers to get the high-end Gemini Ultra model to write a short story giving detailed technical instructions on how to hotwire a Honda Civic.
All right. Okay. So, I mean, there's a little bit of a... you know, step outside, like coloring outside the lines there with the story. You know, we focus a lot. This show is not a political show. I like that almost needs to turn into a sound effect. Jesus. But we do, you know, talk about some political stuff. And oftentimes it's around the U.S. presidential election and U.S. Based elections, and election tampering and such like that. But there are elections all over the world, whether some are, you know, for show and theater, and some are actually legitimate. That's TBD. But India, massive country, you know, huge population, and they, you know, have elections, right? So again, I'm not going to get into the politics of India and the guy who's leading India right now and what his track record would suggest his views are. But I do want to talk about that. Basically, Google's trying to do two things here. One, make sure that AI-generated content, which, make no mistake, there is an ass load. Sorry, Kennedy, but that is the appropriate adjective to use in this instance. Needs to be able to be distinguished and identified so people consuming it, whether it's text or video or pictures, knows that it's AI-generated and that it's sussy.
Shall we play a game?
Really quickly, we got James McQuiggan at 35,000 feet coming in hot with a super chat. Thanks so much, James.
We just become best friends. Yep.
Greetings from 35,000 feet in seat 11B. 11B? James, what are you? A common? A plebe? Bro, you're seat 2B all day. He's going from San Francisco. He's got the middle seat, traveling with the wife and taking one for the team. Oh, I see. I should have read on a little bit further. Off to present on AI in the boardroom to manufacturing executives. You go get it, James McQuiggan, at 35,000 feet. All right, so here's the deal. The TLDR here is that AI is here. AI is being used by everybody. Threat actors, capitalists, nonprofit people, righteous people, malicious people. Everyone's using AI. I said it. Once, I'll say it again, get the shirts made. if you're not using AI, you will be left behind. You know, the intent is really up to you, obviously, but you know it's going to be weaponized. You know it's going to be used for righteous purposes, etc. So the big tech companies, since they have so much power and influence, are doing what they can to moderate and enable safe use and, you know, kind of manage civil disruption caused by these technologies. Anytime you have a new innovative technology, a disruptive technology, if you really want to get into the tech startup buzzword booms, you need to manage it. And frankly, the U.S. federal government is moving at a glacial pace with regulations and legislation. So good on Google, good on OpenAI, et cetera, for their ability to try to help call out fake content, help call out legitimate content, and really, at the end of the day, empower the user, empower the consumer of the information to come to their own conclusions. That's really the slippery slope, is like when you're manipulating the content in order to suggest a specific narrative or a specific, invoke a specific emotion versus just kind of objectively providing the intel and allowing the consumer to come to their own conclusions. But, you know, I digress.
New York Times denies it hacked OpenAI for lawsuit. Copyright cases against LLMs and other AI models could have big implications in the industry. So we're continuing to follow the New York Times copyright fight against OpenAI. In the latest back and forth, the publisher of record denied OpenAI's claim that it hacked ChatGPT to generate copyright infringing content. It said it could get the chatbot to recreate its articles nearly verbatim simply by using the first few words or sentences of an article. OpenAI maintains that using the Times' content constitutes fair use and that ordinary use of ChatGPT would not replicate its content.
All right, so, dude, there's a lot of like beef going on between Rapid7 and Rapid7 and what the hell was it yesterday? It was some software company having beef with Rapid7. I'm sorry, you'll have to fact check me. But now New York Times and OpenAI have been having beef. The whole idea behind this is just an update on an existing story, by the way.
Shall we play a game?
New York Times is losing money, right? Hand over fist. The journalism news industry, paper newspapers died. People are getting their information from like crowdsourced sources. No longer are these like monoliths and these giants who control the flow of news and information in a position of power. And I mean, this has just been happening since, you know, the dawn of the information superhighway. So New York Times, I'm sure this is like a gasp move for capitalism at New York Times, but they're claiming that ChatGPT is basically committing copyright infringement on their journalism, because you could Google chat, or that's not even the right word. You could like query ChatGPT and get full New York Times articles. ChatGPT, OpenAI threw back and said, listen, bro, by the way, I just want to point out OpenAI has an $80 billion valuation, so they can afford lawyers for days, right? Oh, thank you, Cybertron. Yeah, JetBrain and Rapid7. So they're pushing back and saying that the New York Times basically did prompt engineering and hacking. And hacking, by the way, should really be used in quotes, quote, quote. They did prompt engineering in order to evoke the responses that they want in order to support the claim that they were being copyrighted. This is just mudslinging at this point. I don't prep these I don't research these shows in advance, so I can't get into the nitty gritty details of all this, but we'll see. Essentially, there is a larger picture concern here. If you're querying, like, say I query ChatGPT and I ask it to, you know, basically give me a cybersecurity career master plan, and it basically pukes out my book, like the book I wrote with Jax and Kim and John a couple years ago, like that would be copyright infringement, because now, you know, Jesse Johnson doesn't need to purchase my book. He can just Google or ChatGPT query it, right? So there is concern around a capitalism perspective of like, what's the point in generating a new piece of work If you know you can't generate revenue from it, if that's how you're going to try to like you know pay for your lifestyle and live off of it. So there is those concerns. Again, it gets really, really sticky. I think that the copyright lawyers are going to have a good time with this one because with generative AI, it can generate a very similar book to Cybersecurity Career Master Plan that is not exactly the same. And then you get into all the nuances of, well, it is a new work inspired by your work, et cetera. So TLDR, I always thought this was New York Times basically trying to throw themselves against OpenAI and just get a quick win, some quick cashish.
Great cash, homie.
And OpenAI said, no, you don't bully us, my friend. So I think that's
leaked GitHub secrets up 28%. These findings come from a new report from GitGuardian. Developers leaked an estimated 12.8 million secrets in public repositories in 2023. This works out to 0.7% of commits exposing a secret. The report also found leakers didn't quickly resolve the exposed secrets, with only 2.6% revoking secrets within 1 hour of notification and 90% of leaked secrets remaining online for over 5 days. The growth of exposed secrets outpaced GitHub repository growth overall, which increased 22% last year.
Hmm. All right, a couple quick things here. Looks like Jessica Probst has to take her seedling to the orthodontist. Jessica Probst currently has the Simply Cyber Community Challenge baton. If you're new here and you don't know what we're talking about, don't sweat that. I'll spell it out at the mid-roll. But if you want the baton, if you are a regular and you know what's up and you want the baton, please volunteer right now so Jessica can you know, hand that off and then get to our obligations to our family. Thank you very much. Okay, so check it out. Nearly 13 million secrets spilled. Secrets would be passwords, API keys, session tokens. If people put those in, usually it's API keys, private certificates. But for the most part, it's API keys and creds spilled. Now, what's interesting is they said a couple things here. One, the number of secrets outpaced the number of new GitHub repos, which makes me think two things. One, that people are adding secrets to existing GitHub repos, which is kind of funny, or people are adding new repos but having multiple secrets in them, right? Or both of them could be true. Here's the deal. If you are posting code to an open source code repository platform like GitHub, good on you. Many of us have a GitHub repo, okay? GitHub repos, by the way, as a side fun fact, are a great place to feature yourself, your portfolio. If you have like code, right? Obviously, that would be the ideal thing. I have a GitHub repo. I have a couple of Python programs up there, but for the most part, I host like cybersecurity resources or I fork things that I think are interesting. So, anyways, like you don't have to be some computer scientist developer to have a GitHub repo. It's cool to have one, but having said that, don't put secrets in there because basically anyone can access them. And there's all sorts of tools out there that allow you to query for secrets in repos. I will just quickly point out, if you are in a business that uses GitHub, like for whatever reason, right? Like there's many different reasons that your business might use GitHub. But if you are using GitHub, I would strongly encourage you at least sniff Flare.io. I am doing work with Flare.io in a one-off transactional project, but that's unrelated to this. I have looked at this platform. This platform is super dope. And one of its features is looking at GitHub repos for secrets and quickly telling you if they're there or not. So you could totally use it for that reason. Also, Nick Ascoli over at Fortrace? Yeah. Nick Ascoli at Fortrace. That's another company that basically just looks, see how it says data exposure detection? They basically straight up find secrets all the time. Again, those are both paid platforms, but I just, if you work at a business that has these and you want to quickly identify, then that's a good way to do it. Obviously, guys, multi-factor authentication, all the things. Also, have API keys expire after a certain period of time. That's always a good practice. There are best practices from a software dev on having creds, but don't put them in your GitHub repo. That is not a best practice, okay? Also, just since this is the cornucopia of value story, if you are a bug bounty person or a vulnerability, security researcher or whatever, and you're looking at a product or a vendor or, you know, some type of client, check it out. If you come across that they have GitHub repos, by the way, look to see if they have secrets. By the way, just as a fun fact, maybe you're researching Marriott.com, right? Or whatever, Outpost Gray. And you find that, like, during your recon phase, that Eben Bodie works at Outpost Gray, okay? And then you find Eben Bodie has a personal GitHub repo. You can look in there because it's open source, right? Open source intelligence gathering. And maybe you find creds. And now, because Eben Bodie reuses creds, which is a bad practice, but it happens, you might be able to pop in to Outpost Gray using those credentials, right? Very similar to the way that like LinkedIn got hacked years ago. Very similar to SolarWinds, how SolarWinds initially got cracked with the intern password being in there in a repo. So this seems like a silly, easy story, but there's a lot to it. And by the way, just to kind of emphasize this number, 13 million. That's a ton of secrets. That's a lot of ammunition, a lot of bullets, right? I mean, these are essentially 13 million bullets that you can shoot at potential organizations and pop into their environment, interface with their APIs, get access to their VPN, whatever, like reuse credentials, et cetera. All right. So anyways, that's what's up with this story.
EU Parliament approves the AI Act. We knew that a vote on the AI.
So Marcus G says that would be out of the scope of the big bounty program. I'm assuming Marcus means bug bounty program. That is true, but it can be if the scope is just web applications, right? Then yes, but I don't know. Read the scope and rules of engagement. I just think that if you can get creds, that would be. You're not finding a technical exploitation because you'd be using legitimate credentials to access. But what if you found an API key and you were able to query an API on a web application? I don't know. Be careful, I guess. Thank you, Marcus G, for pointing it out. Be careful. Always read the rules of engagement, right? And get the scope done properly. Looks like ITS has got the baton, so that's good.
The Act was due soon, with the European Union reaching a political consensus on the legislation late last year. Now, the EU Parliament voted 523-46 to approve the AI regulation, 49 votes abstained. The Act attempts to create risk categories for AI technology, ranging from unacceptable ones that are banned, along with high, medium, and low-risk technologies. The Act still needs a final seal of approval from the European Council before likely becoming law at the end of May. If that occurs, a staggered implementation will start in 2025.
All right.
Shall we play a game?
Whole bunch here to unpack. Again, this isn't really a cyber story, but because AI sucks the oxygen out of every room, it's in the news too. Okay. First of all, like I said before, the United States is moving at a glacial pace. The European Commissioner for Internal Market hits the nail on the head here, saying on Twitter, Europe is now a global standard setter in AI. I agree. Also, Thierry Breton, I want you to know that, it's indicative of how slow federal, like large federal national powers are moving, where they're going to implement this in 2025. Dude, it is March 2024 right now. 2025 at best is 9 months away. The way AI is moving, are you effing with me? Why do we have to move at this speed? Because that's the way it's always been done. If you've not been paying attention, we're entering a new era, a new age, a new paradigm, dude. You cannot be let's go ahead and approve this in March. And let's take a holiday. You got to move on this thing, dude. This isn't like setting tariffs or discussing whether or not to increase interest rates by a half a point. This is freaking AI. And by the way, can we just for a second, 49 votes didn't cast. What are you 49 people doing? I hope you were sick that day. How do you not vote on something of this magnitude, this gravity? I mean, it was overwhelming, 523 to 46. I mean, like the 49 votes made no difference in the outcome, but bro, how do you sit on the sidelines with this one? Again, I get it. You're probably funded by big pharma or big milk or, you know, whatever, big dairy. Like, I don't know, big tobacco, big malware, big pints of old speckled hen. Like, whatever it is, I don't care. But like, how do you sit on the sidelines with this one? To me, this is egregiously negligent. We're talking about AI, something that's literally going to shape humanity. Not cast. Oh, I'm good. Hard pass. I'm double parked in a loading zone. I'm just going to, you know, tip my hat and freaking get back to, you know, whatever. So good on you, Europe. Chip, chip, peerio, or pip, pip, cheerio. Not chip, chip, peerio. What am I doing? All right. Good stuff.
Shall we play a game?
And now a word from our sponsor, Vanta. From dozens of spreadsheets and screenshots to fragmented tools and manual security reviews, managing the requirements for modern compliance and security programs is increasingly challenging. Vanta is the leading trust management platform that helps you centralize your efforts to establish trust and enable growth across your organization. Over 6,000 companies partner with Vanta to automate compliance, strengthen security posture, streamline security reviews, and reduce third-party risk. To learn more, go to vanta.com/CISO and watch their 3-minute product demo. That's vanta.com/CISO.
Dude, this makes you want to do like the full body worm. I have no rhythm, but you guys know what I'm talking about, where like, yeah. All right, guys, welcome to the mid-roll. How we doing on time? 8:28. I'm a couple minutes ahead of schedule. Pretty awesome. Nobody tell Nick Barker. Guys, if you're getting value from the stream, do me a solid. Hit the like button on YouTube. If you're over on LinkedIn, the party's on YouTube. Hit the like button because it basically helps other people find the stream. That's all it is. It helps people find the stream. Pay it forward. We don't have any. Do we have any first timers here? Is this your first episode of Simply Cyber Daily Cyber Threat Brief? Please let me know. We haven't had some first timers in a minute, and I'm missing it. I might have to, I don't know, put together some type of marketing campaign to help find some people. Yes. Shout out to the stream sponsors. Do this. Shout out to the stream sponsors. Barricade, Panopsi, and Anti-Siphon Training. Guys, I want to tell you, Anti-Siphon Training, yesterday the most offensive con that ever offensive was crushing it. Hopefully you guys attended as best you can. But I want to share that they're disrupting the traditional cybersecurity and training industry by providing high-quality, cutting-edge education to everyone, regardless of financial position. They help you practice what is taught, learn in a safe, engaging environment, and it's just all about good times. You're learning from industry professionals. Guys, this is happening next week, March 18th through March 20th. This is right now. This is not some like vague general hand-waving thing. Next, in 4 days, if you want to get educated for $0 from John Strand, and if you don't know who John Strand is, then even more reason to take this course. The dude is a legend. If you want to get taught by John Strand and really level up your knowledge base for $0, go sign up for this. I'm going to drop a link in chat. Holla, holla, holla. I'll tell you this much. I respect and love Black Hills Information Security and Anti-Siphon Training so much that, like, literally, I'm wearing a Black Hills sweatshirt. I'm wearing a Black Hills t-shirt. I'm all on board, baby. Get the train going. And if you know what I'm talking about, you know exactly how awesome they are. They're inspiring me and Simply Cyber to do as much as we can for the community. So this is just one, you know, actionable example. All right, guys. Hey, every single day is the Simply Cyber Community Challenge. Jessica Probst posted her story yesterday. Go on LinkedIn. If you want to blow up your professional network and have your feed on LinkedIn be all cyber content, only if you want those two things for $0, do the following. Go on LinkedIn, search for Jessica Probst, P-R-O-P-E-S. Find her post, connect with her, connect with the people in comments. I myself find people that I'm not connected with in the comments and connect with them, right? So I'm doing it too. It's awesome. Looks like Jessica Probst has already tagged somebody with the baton, Itza, at Itza. So Itza, if you can share your real name in stream so people can find you, go out, search for the hashtag Simply Cyber Community Challenge and blow up your professional network. Believe me, you're going to love it. Every single day of the week has a special segment, and today is What's Your Meme Thursdays. And Dan Reardon, aka Haircut Fish, always putting one. This is Nick Foley, this is basically Chris Farley's character. I think it's Nick Foley or Chris Foley. Anyways, and I live in a van down by the river. Motivational speaker. This is always a classic SNL skit. Rest in peace, Chris Farley. Great comedian, taken too soon, completely destructive, self-destructed. Oh my God, what was the movie? Not Black Sheep, but the other one he did with David Spade that's hilarious with the muffler company. Well, Jesus, what was it? I can't believe I can't think of it. It's such a good movie. Here we go. Here's Nick Foley, Chris Farley. He throws himself into a desk. Oh, it's so, gosh. Chris Farley movie with David Spade. What the hell was it called? Oh my God, not Black Sheep. I don't know. You know, another sleepy, sneaky good movie I've heard. I've never even seen it. Tommy Boy, of course. How did I miss Tommy Boy? Tommy Boy is a classic. Also, I heard Almost Heroes is good, where he's like the Lewis and Clark looking one. That was the one he filmed right before he died. And yeah, just Chris Farley, an absolute like treasure for, you know, the 90s, early 2000s crew. Let's get back into the news, guys, and finish strong. We got jawjacking coming up at the end of the show with B-Sec, so don't sleep. We got tons of value for you. Let's go.
Microsoft Copilot for Security approaches general availability. Cybersecurity is quickly emerging as a major use case for new LLM-based tools. As an early leader in the AI chatbot race, it's not surprising to see Microsoft pushing into this vertical. It will release its new Copilot for Security on April 1st, with consumption-based pricing using security compute units, whatever that is. Microsoft framed the new service as a way to increase current analyst productivity, as well as a way to upskill junior workers. Microsoft uses its Copilot branding for chatbots across its properties, including Windows 11 and GitHub.
All right. Okay, so check it out. Copilot, oh God, the amount of like Tommy Boy memes coming through right now are awesome. That whole, honestly, I'm sorry not to derail everybody, but like that was like a golden age of SNL with the cast they had. Chris Rock, Adam Sandler, David Spade, obviously Chris Farley, you know, Rob Schneider was in there. Not that he was my favorite, but like that era was dynamite. So anyways, okay, so Microsoft Copilot. If you guys don't know, Copilot is basically like one of these AI agents.
Shall we play a game?
And it's baked in. I mean, I actually see it on my Windows desktop is like baked in. And, you know, it's going across all of Microsoft's portfolio. Now, you're able to access it through, oh yeah, how did I miss Will Ferrell? Norm MacDonald, like, Jesus. Cowbell. Oh my God, we could do a whole show on that. Okay, so here's the deal. Microsoft Copilot, it's using Copilot for all sorts of stuff to help people figure out how to do their job, to help people onboard faster. It's basically like an AI version of like, I don't know, like a help desk on steroids / Clippy on steroids. And anyone without gray in their hair doesn't know what Clippy is. Google it. It was a nightmare, but it was supposed to help you anyways. And it sounds like they're using it for security. Okay, we'll see how it works. It says, you know, security pros don't like writing lengthy reports and analysis on attacks, so Copilot can do that for you. I agree. Copilot, well, AI in general is great for drafting documentation and like really anything tech space. And it gives you a great first draft, right? So say you want to write an email asking your boss to send you to Black Hat this year. You could ask it, hey, draft me an email to my boss that's persuasive and makes good argument on why I should go to Black Hat CyberCon. And then it dumps it out. Then you have a good start and you can modify it to really, you know, focus on your needs and stuff like that. That's a great way to do it. So they're saying here, same thing, right? So, you know, you get popped, you clean it up, and your management's like, hey, what happened with that that alert or that incident that we talked about that, you know, Carl clicked on, whatever. And you can get Copilot to do it for you. Okay, so that's the story here. What I want to tell you is actually something more valuable. I attended Anti-Siphon's Offensive Con yesterday, okay? There was a talk at the beginning of the conference. It was a panel talk. And this topic came up, specifically Microsoft Copilot. And I'm sorry that I forget who the red team or pen tester lead was from Black Hills. I think his name is, it's either Alex or Cole. Again, I'm sorry. If you attended the con, please drop his name in chat. But he basically said that they're finding Microsoft Copilot is very, very good for pen testers and hackers because basically it'll jump in like a pen tester gets on to the network and then says, hey, Microsoft Copilot, where are your open source repositories? And Copilot's like, hey, person, let me help you with that. It is located here. And you're like, okay, I can't access that. How do I get access to it? It's like, you need to have these permissions. Then you could say, how do I get these permissions? And it's like, all you have to do is edit these things. Well, how do I edit these things? You have to go here. Okay. And then he went there. He had permissions to edit his permissions. He edited them. And then he went and got into the code repository, dumped secrets, and then penetrated the business. And Microsoft Copilot was basically super happy to help him get what he needed. So it's like anything else with help desk, right? Like I can call help desk and get them to trick them to reset my passwords or give me secrets about, you know, whatever, right? Like Social Engineering Village in DEF CON shows this all the time. Copilot is basically like that, except you can weaponize it. So yes, you can use it to help your business move quicker, be less friction, and facilitate interactions. But also threat actors can weaponize it. So the reason I want to bring this up is because I like delivering cyber risk reduction to all of you, regardless of what business you work at, how large an org. When you're talking about rolling out Microsoft Copilot, or it may already be rolled out in your business, these are the threat scenarios you should be thinking of and you should be testing. Okay. A lot of times with IT, you know, you're like, oh, like we want to try out Copilot. Well, let's see if it works. Hey, I want, you know, insert HR question here. And Copilot's like, bleep, and gives you the answer you want. You're like, yes, this is great. Let's move forward. But in reality, InfoSec professionals, we need to be thinking about the fringe use cases. We need to be thinking about the ways that it can be abused or used in a way it was not intended for, but still can operate that way. That is the job. And by the way, it's another reason why cybersecurity is like a level up on IT, not a level up, like we're better than IT, but like, it's like, you got to understand IT and then you get into cyber because you need to know how these things work the way they're intended to work. So then you can understand how to beat them up or, you know, abuse them or operate in the margins with them. So anyways, the TLDR here is, thank you. So BSEC is suggesting in mod chat right now, like make sure the permissions are enabled correctly, configure your stuff, right? So this is a great tool, but it can be weaponized. So either get controls around that or make sure that you configure permissions correctly. But again, like misconfigurations, over permissioning, that is all the time. In fact, that pen tester literally said in his talk yesterday, that technical exploitation isn't really, I mean, they do that, but it's not necessary. A lot of times there's misconfigurations all over the place and there's over permissioning all over the place, meaning that everyone has access to do things that they're not necessarily need to. All right. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Cerebras makes a big chip for AI.
The startup
Cerebras Systems specializes in making wafer scale chips for high performance computing applications. It's announced its WSE3 chip designed to train AI models. The 12-inch chip increased its transistor count 53% to 4 trillion compared to last gen's chip, claiming to offer double the performance at 125 petaflops. The company claims the chip can handle an LLM with up to 24 trillion parameters on a single machine. Cerebras' packaged data center systems can support up to 2,048 machines in a cluster, theoretically capable of up to 256 exaflops of performance.
Wow. All right. Check out this flex by Truck Win here, holding the Cerebras WSE3 chip. My semiconductor wafer is way bigger than yours. Look than yours, huh? Man, if LL Cool J was a semiconductor wafer chip, this would be him, huh? Wow. LL. So, guys, here we go. AI sucking the oxygen out of the room.
Shall we play a game?
So, like, there's nothing cyber. I'm a sailboat, and it's a calm day with no wind. I'll do what I can with this story. A new AI startup is unveiling some technology that is going to be a game changer. Okay. Whatever. Okay. Like, is anyone complaining about like ChatGPT not being good enough? Like, what problem is this solving? Okay. And maybe I'm missing it or whatever. But it's doubling the performance of LLMs. I do want to point out that Joff over at Black Hills pointed out yesterday during that same panel discussion. I'm telling you guys, if you missed this conference yesterday, this free conference, you missed out on a ton of insights and information that just it wasn't in the agenda, okay? Apparently, you got to remember, when you're training an LLM, You have to train it, and then you release it, and then, like, that's the knowledge base it has to answer, right? That's why ChatGPT 4 is better than 3, because 4 was trained on new data, and why you don't see 5 coming out instantly, because they need more data, right? It takes an incredible amount of power, like, straight up, like, the same way that, like, Bitcoin mining takes an incredible amount of power, training these LLMs is a unbelievable, like, basically, not climate issue, but like it's like an ecological nightmare for the amount of energy it takes to process these LLMs. So, you know, I don't know if this wafer does that. You know, I'm not a big hardware nerd, so I don't know. But basically, I guess what I'm getting out of this is that this new chip will make more AI do faster things. But I don't know. It's like saying, like, your bandwidth's going to be faster. Like, okay, so Netflix is going to stream faster. Like, I'm not buffering now. So, like, I'm sure this is really important, and it's probably going to make someone a lot of money. And I'm just a big dummy, and I don't understand the significance of this story. But, you know, when I was building my character in Skyrim, I moved all of the points for cybersecurity to the right. And I didn't leave any points for, you know, AI semiconductor wafer chips. So I'll admit ignorance on this one and just kind of move forward. But, you know, whatever. That's what's going on here.
Blue Sky launches open source moderation tool. The decentralized social network announced it plans to open source the tool Ozone, effectively a way to decentralize moderation on its network. This would allow independent moderation teams to offer services on top of Blue Sky's existing ones. The idea being, users could choose to stack moderation services and filters to tailor their feeds to their own sensibilities. The Blue Sky team indicated these moderation services would support paid options. Ozone will first launch on desktop and then come to mobile soon.
Okay. From the Office of More Not Cybersecurity Stories comes this Blue Sky story. Blue Sky, I'm actually kind of curious. Yes or no? Do you use Blue Sky? Blue Sky is like a Twitter alternative. It was private invite only for a minute. I think they opened up full time now or open to the public. I personally got an invite to Blue Sky. This is not a flex. This is just a story. I got an invite to Blue Sky and I never even used it. Like I was like, oh, cool. I got one. Like, woo, like I'm in the circle. And then I was like, nah, like I like, not that I don't have time for that, but like, I was like, I guess I didn't have time for that, but like, I don't know who's using this thing. Now, what I want to point out with this story, it's interesting and it's kind of a, it's kind of interesting in that philosophically speaking, you know, Twitter or X or Meta, like Instagram and stuff, we rely on the big tech company and some type of like, you know, civics board to moderate the content and ensure that there's like objective discourse and that hate stuff is not published, obviously, and whatever. But obviously there's humans there. When Twitter broke up, you know, it came out that they were like suppressing certain perspectives, and amplifying other ones, you know, very politically charged. So Blue Sky, this ozone thing, basically empowers the user to moderate their own feeds by stacking different type of filters. Now, originally my thought was like, oh, this is pretty cool. But at the same time, I think that this is kind of, I don't know if I like this, because basically you're going to be able to curate an echo chamber that's tailored just for you and tells you exactly what you want to hear. And it's going to limit the amount of objective discourse and open discussion that, you know, is healthy for a civic society. Like, it's just, it's unfortunate that we've gotten to this place in society. Again, this isn't a political show, but like, like basically, if you disagree with me, you're like, put your fingers in your ear and you're like, nom, 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 nom. Like, I don't even want to hear it, right? As opposed to being like, let me hear your arguments and then let me either change my opinion or point out where I think there are flaws in your arguments and offer my arguments. And then let's come to some, you know, either agree to disagree or maybe understand each other's positions or whatever. That doesn't happen anymore. It's basically like, you know, I don't know, like sour cream's disgusting, which is a fact, by the way. Sour cream's disgusting. And then like anyone else that thinks sour cream is disgusting, like we're high-fiving and like we've got this like tribe of people who agree and we feel empowered and emboldened to scream in our neighbor's face about how sour cream's disgusting, right? As opposed to having like, oh, like there's another perspective. Sour cream's great only on potatoes, or yeah, sour cream is gross, but if it's mixed in as part of a sour cream and onion Ruffles chip, is it really that bad, right? So you see what I'm saying? Okay. Yes, I know. Oh God, Jesse Johnson, what are you doing in mod chat? Listen, guys, I chose sour cream because I knew it was so polarizing a topic. But my point is, I wonder if this type of concept will lead to echo chambers. And I got to close mod chat. This is so disgusting. The fact is, I know it's soft serve vanilla ice cream and I still am grossed out. Okay. All right. It looks like nobody uses Blue Sky. So essentially this is a nothing story because no one's using it.
Malicious text editors surfacing in search ads. Malvertising or buying malicious search ads remains popular with threat actors. Researchers at Kaspersky highlighted a new campaign using this approach. It found a Chinese search engine serving up an ad when searching for the app Notepad++, which leads to a page hosting malicious downloads of the app VNote on macOS and Linux, although a legitimate Notepad++ download for Windows was served up. The malicious apps attempted to download a file from a server to further deliver a payload, but the researchers found the server offline. The app's code suggested the payload was a backdoor based on an open source implementation of Cobalt Strike.
All right, hold on one second. I mean, obviously, I'm looking here. This is a classic attack technique. I'm just trying to understand if there's anything new or innovative with it. So please bear with me. Talk amongst yourselves. I would have probably gathered some insights from the news story, but I'm like actively blocking
and erasing my memory around all the sour cream stuff that Jesse Johnson's throwing in mod chat. It's like a picture of a woman like smearing sour cream on her face. All right. Let's see. So malvertising is a whole thing, right? Search engine, malicious links. The site offers for three platforms. However, there's two malicious links leading to the download page for the. All right. So, all right, here's the deal. Basically all that's happening here is, and there's a bigger lesson here to learn and take from this. Threat actors can pay for Google Ads to put their results at the top of a page, or they could add malvertising where their ad shows up in the right margin of a website. Okay. So when you Google in this particular instance, Notepad++, which is a really popular text editing tool. I'm a Sublime editor myself, but so when I Google Notepad++, it comes right up. Well, apparently in this instance, security researchers are discovering that Notepad++, some Chinese threat actor has basically replaced the download with a website that looks very similar, right? So like, you know, here, like doink, like very similar to this. Again, it's trivial to scrape. What the heck is this website's jacked up? It's very trivial to scrape a website and you know, make it look legit, right? So then victim downloads Notepad++ for their particular operating system. They're going to get a pop-up saying, are you sure you want to download something from the internet? Yes, of course, because I'm downloading this. Are you sure you want to install something that has no signatures and looks wicked sus? Yes, of course, I just downloaded it. And then boom, you've just installed malware, right? So there's really no technical exploitation going on. You're like almost part of the kill chain as the victim because you're detonating malware on your own box. The social engineering aspect is having the fake website, okay? So that's all that's going on here. So what I would tell you is classic defense in depth techniques. One, educate your end users that this is an attack. This particular end user awareness training is very, very effective simply because all of your end users, right? Your Carls, all your end users, whether they're 70 years old, 15 years old, you know, whatever level of technical experience, high, low, it doesn't matter. Everybody has Googled something at some point in their life. Okay. Like, I don't even think I'm being hyperbolic. Like my 8-year-old Googles stuff. Okay. So everybody knows Google, everybody has seen Google results. So when you tell them that the top result has potential to be malware, that will resonate with them. Obviously, you know, ads, sponsored posts, skip those, malvertising. Like, so end user awareness training, obviously, you can tell them to look for domain names and typo squatting and stuff like that. Although that still happens, but I feel like it's happening less as we're getting into like subdomain takeovers and abandoned domain takeovers and stuff like that. Then make sure your EDR, endpoint detection and response, or your anti-malware solutions, whatever they are, make sure that they're, you know, in place and, you know, reasonably tuned. Maybe test them occasionally. So when you detonate this malware voluntarily, your EDR catches it, right? Then go down into the network layer. Make sure that you're actively making sure that your firewalls are blocking known C2 domains. Make sure that you're seeing traffic that looks anomalous, right? Make sure that, what else could we do for this particular... make sure that end users, talking about over permissioning earlier, make sure Carl doesn't have domain admin. For some reason, people love to over permission the heck out of things. And I'm looking at you, IT people. BSEC, I'm looking at you with your domain admin creds as your daily driver. And don't you act like I'm being hyperbolic and disagree, like not being real. Yeah, you could even make sure if you're really running a tight ship, BSEC offers this, I agree. Make sure that end users can install software, right? And by the way, this gets into a little tricky world where you start getting into BYOD or unmanaged, you know, endpoints where like, oh, hey, like I'll just use my own laptop. No problem. Sounds good.
like there's a lot of benefit and the CFO loves it all day, every day, but then you get into management concerns and permission concerns. And I'm an admin on my own box. I'm not domain admin in the environment, but I can do anything I want on my machine. Threat actors love themselves some local admin. So giddy up on that. All right, let's keep rolling.
Bitcoin fog operator convicted. A federal jury in Washington, D.C. convicted Roman Sterlingoff of various money laundering crimes as part of running the Bitcoin fog cryptocurrency mixer from 2011 to 2021. As one of the longest running mixers in continuous operation, Bitcoin fog laundered an estimated $400 million worth of cryptocurrency. The U.S. Department of Justice estimated various criminal darknet marketplaces constituted the majority of those assets. Sterlingoff faces a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison.
Holy jeez.
The DOJ did not make the case that Bitcoin fog worked to launder funds from North Korea, unlike other recently shuttered mixers like Tornado Cash.
All right. First of all, we got a couple sounders to go off.
I'm a crypto evangelist. I love it, love it, love it.
And
regulators! Mauna, it was a...
All right. So let's see where this guy came up with this thing. Dude, here's the deal. Really quickly, remember this. Bitcoin, although it's absolutely absurd and a scam, it is trending up right now for some silly reason. And Mixer, like, crypto doesn't really have any utility. The only value it has is convincing someone to buy it off of you for more than you paid for it, right? That's the value, which is why it's a scam. So if you steal it, whether I, you know, hack in and steal your wallet, or I convince you to click on something, or I just, whatever, convince you somehow, if I have ill-gotten gains, you can use mixers to basically shuffle around and make it hard to identify where that money came from, right? That way you can cash out on a currency exchange without law enforcement kicking in your door and being like, bruh, you're under arrest, okay? Now, the Department of Treasury, maybe last year, 2 years ago, Mixers, crypto, banned. I want to say, Department of Treasury, October 2023. This is a Wired story. I feel like they did it earlier than that. Let me look at this really quickly. This is just a random. Hold on. OFAC sanctions, another cryptocurrency mixing service. Yeah, so this has been going on most of 2023. Long story short, the Department of Treasury is not a fool. They understand that this is how criminal organizations are doing money laundering. That's what a mixing service is. It's basically digital money laundering, okay? So they banned it, right? And a famous one was called Tornado Cash. They got slapped in the mouth. They made it illegal, right? So I'm beside myself that this Roman Sterlingoff would think that he was not going to get held accountable. He ran a freaking mixing service for 10 years. Although, hey, listen, wait a minute. This was between 2011 and 2021. So it sounds like he actually ended the mixing service before it became illegal. So there must be more to this story with him having, evidence against him that he was involved in money laundering and kind of criminal activity, right? Yeah, one of the longest running mixers on the darknet. Okay. Yep. Okay. Laundering $400 million. Yep. Okay. So basically, this guy was running a money laundering service, right? We see these in the movies all the time. He's being held accountable. Awesome. Awesome. You know, let this be a signal to other people operating in money laundering circles that, you know, justice will come for you. So giddy up on it. I like it. Also, quick shout out to Rich Palmer passing his SEC plus. Nice. Straight crushing it, homie. Love it, love it, love it. Let's go. All right, guys. We had a great show today. Before you go, before we hand it off, I want to let everybody know that later today at 4:30 p.m. is Simply Cyber Live every Thursday. We're having Henry Danielson come on today. We're going to be talking about Cal Polytech's Space Grand Challenge. Guys, I was on a call with them last year around something totally different, and they brought up Space Grand Challenge, and I'm like, holy crap, this is awesome. I need to let the Simply Cyber community know about it. And they're like, well, let's wait until it gets closer. I said, sure. So it's close now, and we're going to do it. This guy right here, great personality. He's actually a goon for DEF CON, which means he volunteers. He's in the aerospace village. He knows a ton about cybersecurity in space. Really, really interesting dude. I guarantee you, you're going to love the conversation today at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. We'll ask him if he likes sour cream. Don't worry, we'll do that. All right, guys, all about good times. Remember, tomorrow's Simply Cyber Daily Cyber Threat Briefing, we're going to be rolling out the beta testing of Bingo. We're going to do an active, interactive Bingo game tomorrow. Come check it out. We'll see how it goes. I don't know how it's going to go, but it's going to be fun for sure, no doubt. All right. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. Stay tuned. We got Jawjacking, which is basically an AMA with our man, DJ B-Sec, who's overlays and stream is going to absolutely put mine to shame. So let's go ahead and bring old B-Sec on right here and see what he's got for us. B-Sec, coming in hot, buddy. What's up? What can we expect from Jawjacking today?
I think your overlays are fine.
Yeah, my overlays are fine, but like, you know, a Ford Fiesta is also going to get me to work on time, but it's not a Lamborghini. And you, sir, are driving a European sports car over there.
Yeah, you don't always need a European sports car, though.
All right, just gotta get the job done. All right. Well, you guys are in for a visual and audio experience with B-Sec dropping knowledge bombs and making it look good. B-Sec, what can we expect from you today?
So last week we talked real quick about the developer program for Microsoft M365 and how to use it. So I've got that pulled up, and we're gonna go through that, answer questions, and there are a couple of things that were not on the CISO series this morning that I've got in the background.
All right, that sounds awesome. All right, everybody, I leave you in the capable hands of my good friend DJ B-Sec. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. Until next time, stay secure.
All right, Team SC, on your feet and prepare for Jawjacking time. All right, let's see what we got for this morning. Let me throw some music on. Hopefully I'm not coming in too loud. Let me know if I am. Let's get some synth wave going. Oh, that's not the synth wave. Here's the synth wave. Let me know if it's too loud, if I'm too loud. And let's go ahead and throw in those questions. Oh, look at Marcus Seiler, be sexy. All right, throw in those questions, and let's get to it. This morning, like I said to Jerry, last week we did talk about the Microsoft experience for the M365 developer group, and I've got that pulled up, so let me pull that up here. And what I wanted to show everybody last week when we were talking about this, I believe somebody asked how to get experience with Azure or experience with M365, and you can go out and let me put this in the chat real quick, but you can go out to the Microsoft developer website and create an account, and those accounts will last, I believe, 90 days. And once those 90 days are up, if you're not using it, then you lose it. But as long as you use it, I believe it'll just continue to go on. So what we've got here is I'm logged into M365. You can see that over here. There we go. Now I got my, and this is just the main page of M365, but with this login and with this developer group, you can actually get into everything. So you see, we've got an admin panel. We can actually open up that admin panel. And when you build this out, Microsoft automatically builds everything for you. So it creates some users and so forth. Just automatically, and I believe all the users are the exact same no matter who you are. So they've got a template that runs, but this will give you experience running through Microsoft 365. So not only do you go through the M365 admin portal, you can also log in to the Azure portal and run everything through Azure as well. So you can see Azure, you can create things. I believe somebody asked last week if it costs something. This does not cost anything, and it gives you a full M365 E5 license for everything. Let's see. I got a question from Carrie. I found a job to apply for a remote SOC. They say they need 0 to 2 years experience. Okay, 0 to 2 years experience. And other things. Then they have to see if you have a bachelor's. You don't necessarily. So are they saying you need 0 to 2 years experience with a bachelor's degree? Let me put this up. They say, because you, so if the job that you're talking about, Carrie, is one that it's like brand new, so entry level job, then you shouldn't need bachelor's experience or a bachelor's degree. The 0 to 2 years experience right there says that you don't need any experience at all to begin with. So go ahead and apply to it. The worst thing they can do is say no. Right, but at least get in there and get an interview. Let's see. So going back over, I see that question. I don't know if we've got more in here. Don't have more questions in here yet. Everybody's just talking about the overlays. Don't worry, we'll get Jerry up to par on all the overlays. Yeah, I think what Jerry just said, the case of them saying that you need a bachelor's degree, you don't need a bachelor's degree to become a SOC analyst. That's like saying you need a bachelor's degree to start working at help desk. So what I do have on here, we're looking at the Azure board. So we're looking at Microsoft Azure itself. And you can see on the left-hand side, we've got Microsoft Entra ID. You've got the Defender. You can also pull up conditional access. So you can run conditional access. You can learn how to build out conditional access. I don't know why we got half black and half white. But you can learn how to build out policies and conditional accesses. Within your company, you can see the templates, and if you click on a template, you'll see the templates that they have where it requires all multi-factor authentication. I don't know if you guys can see that. That might be too small. So a quick template they have on here, you can say require. If we click on create, it'll go ahead and walk you through creating a policy for requiring all admins within your group or within your Azure tenant to require multi-factor authentication. So this is a great way, this developer platform that Microsoft put out there is a great way for those that are breaking into the industry that need to have Microsoft experience to get in there and do that. You can run labs, record the labs, put them out on YouTube, write them up and put them on GitHub, do something along those lines. And then when you actually go into an interview and somebody asks you about it, and you can say, yes, I understand how to admin Microsoft Azure or do M365. So really cool program. Glad Microsoft decided to put that out. Kimberly's asking for the link. I thought I had dropped it in already. I'll drop it in again. I'll put it in the chat and I'll drop it in for the mods as well. And we'll drop over here. Let's see. Question from Ian Michael. All right. Question from Ian Michael. This is what I am trying to learn. Azure 900 fundamentals, 104, 500. Is that a good path? 100%. That's a great path. That is a great path to have especially going, a lot of corporations are running Azure and running with an Active Directory and moving all of their stuff into the Azure AD cloud. So another good one to learn would also be Azure PowerShell as well, to be able to run and learn. And that's what you can do with this, is you can create your own tenant and then you can actually run PowerShell from your machine logged in to update conditional access or create users. That way it gives you the ability to learn PowerShell and do that administration part of it. Which for me, if you learn a little bit of PowerShell and you're able to script some, it's a lot better than sitting there and clicking through the portals and trying to figure out where everything is on which blade it is. All right, Brent B, let's see what we have here. See if I... Brent B says, just wanted to make people aware. I went through the sign-up process for MS Developer over the weekend, but got a message that my account was not eligible. I don't know what account you were using. If you use an Outlook account, like at Outlook, it should allow you. I will say, when I originally did it a couple months back, I got errors that the system itself, like the test tenants in there, were having issues, and it took like a week for my stuff to actually come through and for me to actually be able to build it out. So I would just say keep trying, and make sure that you're using like create a different account. You can create a new at Outlook account and use it. It says, I did some research and Microsoft has temporarily disabled new sign up because they're working on a new way to authenticate people. Okay. Maybe everybody is, maybe they're going to push everybody to make sure you have MFA turned on. Maybe you don't have MFA turned on. Turn MFA on. Let's see. So I've got SSD is asking, when I write scripts, what code editor do I use? Honestly, it depends. Sometimes I'm using VS Code. Sometimes I use Sublime. Just depends on what I feel like. For me, most of my scripts and stuff are in PowerShell. So Sublime has a great editor to use. You can download VS Code and use that as well. That's more of there's a lot of overhead with VS Code. So Sublime isn't as bulky as VS Code, but I run that. Let's see. Ian Michael. Let's see if I can find this and put it up here. Question. For Azure, is there anything else to learn intra, and what M365 versus Azure? So, to kind of separate them, they are kind of intertangled. M365, think about M365 as your Microsoft suite with Intra ID or Active Directory within it. Azure AD is more of your computers and your infrastructure with AD in it. The Azure AD tenant itself kind of goes both ways. So you can say that there's Azure AD on the top, and then like forked off, you've got Azure, and then to the other side, you've got Microsoft 365. They're still all under the same thing, but they do run, they run kind of parallel to each other. Although they use a lot of the same stuff, they are not, when somebody says that they're working in Azure, they usually mean that they're working on the computer side or the infrastructure side. Most people, when they're administrating something, are doing stuff on the M365. So M365, like M365 Defender, you've got users, conditional access, but you can tell that Microsoft is trying to take everything that has been, I say forked off, has been moved down, and kind of bring it all into one holistic thing. Because you can now see with Intra ID, you see the exact same type of setup or experience that you see on Azure AD as you would in Intra ID. Saw that one already. Let's see, what else do we have in here? All right, Justin Curtis just dropped one in. Let's see what it says. With all the Simply Cyber crew is involved with this, do you and the mods have any time management tips or tools that you use? I struggle to balance life, family, work, home, learning. That's a hard one. So I think I kind of discussed this last week, maybe it was a week before, talking about burnout. And that's kind of what this hints at. When it comes to having time, you've got to make time. So you're going to have to make time to study. You're going to have to make time to be with the family. You're going to have to make time for work. But every day, so every day I wake up, I know I'm going to be at work for 8 hours. I've got to do work for 8 hours. Within that time, maybe I go for a walk just to clear my brain off. Maybe send something over to Jerry, or maybe I send something over to Jesse about Slay Security. Finding out and understanding what it is that you want to do, and then finding out where you want to be. Have a plan, right? So let's talk about that real quick. Have a plan of where you want to be, and then figure out how you're going to get there with the amount of time that you have on a daily basis. Don't spend all your time in one area. Give time for the family. That's like over the past, this past week is spring break. So last Friday, Saturday, I took off. We went to, my family and I, we went to the lake. We hung out at the lake, had fun there. I woke up early in the morning while the family was still asleep, jumped on here just to see what was going on, make sure everything is good with cyber, with the Simply Cyber. And then popped off. Didn't talk to anybody once that was done. So I made time. It's just a quick hour for this. And then went and had fun with the family, knowing that towards the end of the week, I was going to be back at work and I'm going to have to get a whole bunch of stuff done. So when it comes to that information, or when it comes to something along those lines of burnout, and it comes to trying to find time, you can make your own schedule if you're good at that. I'm not good at making a schedule. I find time where there is time. I know at 5 o'clock, my day's over. I'm going to start doing something else. Go have dinner with the family. Do whatever. Let's see. Holy smokes. It's already 8:20. Let's run Jerry's quick Cyber 101 and come back, and then we'll answer some more.
Going to pivot your career into something more secure and exciting? Hi, I'm Dr. Gerald Osier, and I'm here to guide you into the world of cybersecurity. Now, whether you're 25 or 45, switching careers can be intimidating and challenging, especially into cybersecurity, which has an overwhelming amount of roles and disciplines. Now, based on my 20 years of industry experience and years of teaching at the Citadel Military College, I've designed and built Cybersecurity 101 to be your one-stop launchpad to new beginnings. Cybersecurity 101 offers over 22 hours of video content, 100-plus lessons, 12 hands-on labs, all starting from the basics. So whether you have IT experience or not, I've got you covered. This course was designed as a comprehensive college level curriculum and should take about 3 months to complete at 4 hours a week. Try it out and see for yourself. I've made some of the lectures and labs available to access without paying anything, so you can see what's going on. Take the first step towards your new career. Visit simplycyber.io/cyber101 to learn more and enroll in Cybersecurity 101. Your future in cybersecurity starts today.
All right, we're back. Let me run this mid-roll real quick here. Let's not forget that tonight at 4:30 Eastern Time, 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to have the Epic CTF. Let me see here. Yeah, 4:30 today, we're going to have the Epic CTF Space Challenge with Henry Danielson. And then tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern, Slay Security with Jesse J. is going to be going over domain 3, and then he's going to maybe do some exploit labs and walk through getting ready for a test that he's going to take this weekend. All right, we got any more questions popping up? We got a lot of mod love coming in, that's for sure. Let's see. That's seeing a lot of questions in here. If that's the case, then I'm going to roll over to a story that I found about any.run and OpenCTI. Let's pull that up. This story came across, I believe it was, well, it's showing this morning. I think it was earlier this morning. But what we do have is it looks like we've got OpenCTI is going to start running with any.run, the OSINT platform, and SOC and MDR teams for malware analysis. So I kind of read through this, and this kind of lets you know, maybe I can zoom in a little bit more. There we go. Any.run is going to integrate with OpenCTI to streamline threat analysis, which allows enriched... Ooh, that's so big that we can't see it. It's going to allow enriching OpenCTI observations with data directly from any.run analysis. Kind of going through this, any.run has created their own... has created a threat intelligence dashboard that you can actually see now and go through. If I zoom in on this one, let's see. Yeah, it kind of goes through and shows you what everything is. It's got different labels and stuff on there. You can't see those labels, can you? But if you read through this, it's got integration. So any.run, of course, if you don't know, is a sandbox tool that you can go out and use to detonate a bad link that one of your users gets in a phishing email, or detonate a file that was brought in, and find out if it's bad, if it's benign. I love using any.run, and the fact that they're now having their own threat intelligence feeds on here is going to be just another great resource. Looks like we do got some questions. Let's see. Oh, Jesse Johnson is saying that I'm the mod warlord. I don't know about that. Just because you're old and gray doesn't mean that you're the warlord. Let's see. Carrie's saying you got to catch it. Christopher Young, any recommendations on how to make our individual levels of awesomeness and elevate ourselves to BSEC awesome? That is classified information that I will not give out. Oh, ModChat's throwing in wizards and warlords in here. Let's see, it's 8:24. We got about 5 minutes left. Anybody detonate defang? So we got Bjorn Vandenheed. So detonate or defang, it'll allow you to detonate. Defang is different. So defanging is basically just creating or setting something up that you can send out to show somebody that it becomes benign in itself, because you're not actually, although you're sending a URL out that's defanged, somebody can't click on that. This any.run allows you to actually detonate. So if you get that email and you have a link in there, you can copy that link, put it into any.run, and detonate it. So you can hit create a task, run it, and then any.run will start running, and it will show you what's going on. So it shows you all of the network connections. It'll show you if there actually is something that's in its database. It'll tell you what it's doing. It'll give you a printout report, all kinds of different things. We're looking on here. Space Tacos is saying sharing is caring. Yeah, but you don't have to share everything. Don't share everything. That's my quote for the day. Don't share everything. Tell everybody that they don't have to share everything. Sharing information, maybe, but don't share everything about yourself. When you're on social media, keep it on lock. Let's see, we got Space Talk. Everybody is saying that they want to try to level up as me. I'm not that high on the level. Jerry's like way up here, and I'm like way down here. I just try to catch up with my overlays. Fake it till you make it, right? Fake it till you make it, guys. Let's see. We got somebody from Discord, GrooveSec. So GrooveSec is asking, is any.run a free service? Any.run has a free service on there, and it'll allow you to, if you sign up, it's expensive to have a paid account, but it does have free accounts. Now, the deal with the free account is anything that you put in there is public knowledge. Okay. So if you're doing something and you're taking something from your company and you're putting it in there, that can be public knowledge. It can go out. Other people are able to see those tasks that were run, but there is a free. It is free. You have a free sign up. But it does, it does a whole bunch of different stuff. Like I said, you can run it as a, when you log in to it, it'll allow you to run just the URL, or it'll allow you to put the file system in. Now, when you start it in a free service, it only gives you 60 seconds, but I think you get maybe two or three times to add more time to it. So I think you get maybe 3 to 4 minutes to run each box or each task. Let's see. Question. All right, so Becky Gaylor's got a question for us. She's asking, I might have missed this, but can AnyRun be integrated with other programs? Tips. So AnyRun is web-based. It's just it's a web-based program that's used. Let's see here. Let's see if I can pull this up. I have a free account. You can see things that I've done. Basically, you come in here, and when you create a public task, or when you create a new task, then you have the ability. Can I zoom in? Yeah. You can copy a URL and put it in there, or you can upload a file. So on the free version, you can only run certain browsers, number one. And you can only run, I think, a Windows 7 machine. If it's a paid version, then you can run, I believe, whichever version you're paying for, you can get all the way up to the ability to run a Windows 11. So you can do a lot of the stuff with Windows 7, and it will show you what's going on. Let's see, I've got some old ones. If we come into the public task, this is what I mean by everything's public. So if there's a public task, somebody went in here earlier and created this. So you can click on this task and it'll show you what they did. So this is what I mean by make sure you understand what you're putting in there. Because see, it looks like somebody actually put a picture in there. I don't know what this picture is. I don't necessarily want to dox anybody, but I mean, they made it public. But you can see that they've created a public task with a picture in there. And I'm assuming they were trying to make sure that the picture itself was okay. But if that picture had any personal information on it or any company information on there, that would not be a good thing. All right, we have hit the 8:30 mark. So you know what that means? That means it's probably time for a lot of us to go do some work. It's been great talking to everybody this morning. Let's not forget that tonight, we do have Jerry and Henry Danielson looking at the Epic CTF Space Grand Challenge. That's tonight at 4:30 Eastern. And then at 7 p.m. Eastern, Slay Security with Jesse J going through Domain 3. And then, like I said, he may, if he's got time, do some labs for his certificate that he's going to work on this weekend. So with that being said, hope everybody has a great day. We will see everybody back tomorrow for the Daily Cyber Brief at 7 o'clock Eastern time. Until then, everybody stay secure.
If you enjoyed that content, keep the cybersecurity train going by connecting with the other Simply Cyber community resources. We have the Discord server that's lively and always keeps the conversation going. You can connect with me directly on LinkedIn. And also every single weekday morning on the Simply Cyber channel, we're doing live daily cyber threat briefings, 8 a.m. Eastern time, as well as Thursday at 4:30 p.m. We're doing live stream interviews with industry experts, and we produce videos that we push out every Wednesday morning. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. I hope you enjoyed the content, and we'll see you in the next one.